Welcome, everybody, from all around the world. Welcome to this podcast, Escaping the Entanglements of Our Lives. You got yours, and I've got mine. I'm your host. I'm Dolphus Q. I'm the originator and the creator of this podcast. I believe our lives, yours and mine's, are easily entangled with things both real and imaginary. Some of these things are necessary. Some of these things are absolutely not. They are incendiary. They can burn us up. They can lead us astray. And many of men and women set this day in prison because of their entanglements. But I maintain that escape is possible. Yes, we can escape our entanglements. We can seek out a better way, a brighter day. And it is that simple. As Buddha sitting under that yum yum tree. Yes, the secret lies within us. That's what I believe. And if you're following me, you know that is what I'm doing. I'm reading and writing my book before your very ears. I am escaping the entanglements of my life. One of the entanglements, of which there are many. And what about you? What are you doing to escape the entanglements of your life? What are your joys? What are your victories? It's a complicated thing. And then, who really cares, eh? But you. But, as the walrus said, the time has come. Yes, the time has come, my friends, all around the world, for the reading of the Word. Episode 18, chapter 18, Epaso before sunset. Episode 19. Chapter 19, Sun Sets Before It Rises in El Paso. When the truck stopped and Son Bolo switched off the engine, he and Pete left the cab and came to the door of the camper. It was unlocked. He flung it open. "Okay, mi amigos," Pete shouted with glee. "Estamos aquí, just as I promised." The Mexican men filed from the camper with smiles of gladness and cries of adios. I knew what that word meant. I repeated it and waved goodbye with my hand. When the last man had filed out and the door was closed, Fred seemed suddenly emboldened to express how he felt. I told him $25 a head wasn't worth the risk with all the stops he made at the police station. But that backstabbing bastard won't listen to reason. These days he thinks only of schemes to chase dollar bills and that Indian bitch he picked up in the hills of Oklahoma. I felt no affinity for Fred, but his words stirred a certain curiosity about Pete and the Indian woman. "Oklahoma? Are you and Pete from Oklahoma?" "Nah, I'm from Tennessee. Pete's from Alabama. We met up in Oklahoma at a church mission. We discovered an affinity for each other, and soon Pete and I was partners in his camper in pursuit of his dream to work aboard a fishing boat in Alaska. We made plans. We were set to leave until the night Pete met that Indian bitch. Things ain't been the same since. Well, I started with a slight smile to offer a brighter perspective. At least I'm grateful for this ride to El Paso. I did not envy the long walk we faced ahead of us. Wait a minute. That's as far as y'all gonna go? Fred's eyes widened and sparkled with delight. Y'all ain't gonna continue on with us? No, our destination is California. When we reach El Paso, we will catch out. Fred squinted his eyes at me. I saw confusion on his face and grew eager to explain. Yeah, what I mean, I said with an air of certainty. When we reach El Paso, we will sneak into the yard. The yard, by the way, is slang for the massive assembly sites where freight trains bound in all directions, north, east, south, or west, are loaded and unloaded, taken apart and put together again, one empty or one full rail car at a time. The wait for a freight train can be long, but the policy of most hobos is to catch a ride on the first train that leaves out the yard. Fred laughed like a goofy adult. I see. I get it. Catch out. Catch out. After this fit of laughter, Fred became as jovial as an animated cartoon. He wanted to express repressed thoughts hidden within himself. But more than freedom of expression, he craved a listener like me. I listened politely, and occasionally, when it was deemed, I expressed an acceptance with an utterance such as, "Of course, mm-hmm, oh yes, I see." After hours of practicing this type of listening, I felt like a captive in the camper with a man who had many unresolved issues. Finally, I had heard enough and near the tip of the point of no return, I opened my mouth to rudely tell him something when the truck took a sharp turn and slowed down to a stop. I hurried to the window like I sought a breath of fresh air. The moment I peeked through the window, I recognized from the parked cars we were at a police station. I told Fred what I saw. "That figures," Fred said. "Here we go again." The doors of the cab opened and closed. Soon after they shut, Sunbolo, Pete, and the Indian woman appeared at the door of the camper. Pete grinned as Fred opened the door. "I'm going to go get some gas money. Y'all might as well come in with me. It might help us out." I stepped out of the camper and reminded Sunbolo that I didn't have any ID. He said if I didn't have an outstanding warrant, I should not worry. The lobby of the police station was spacious. There was a long countertop desk from wall to wall protected by a shield of glass that faced a wall of pictures. The pictures were of police officers, from black and white pictures to faces in color, from a bygone era up to the moment. Although the lobby was spacious, it looked smaller and crowded due to a constant flow of grim-faced, tight-lipped policemen. Pete walked up to the shield of glass then politely asked to see the officer in charge. The only officer behind the shield of glass looked up from what appeared to be a radio command console of some sort. He removed a set of earphones from his ears. Well, things are a little haywire right now. I'm only a deputy, but since I'm the only one here, I'm the officer in charge. How can I help? Pete explained his situation. The deputy looked attentive, but as grim-faced as the other policemen who continued to enter or exit the lobby without a nod of recognition towards us. After Pete's passionate explanation, the deputy slowly nodded his head in a manner that suggested he had heard such sob stories before. He pulled out a form from beneath the counter and slid it across to Pete. "Sir, may I see your driver's license?" Pete placed his driver's license on the counter. The deputy picked up the license and looked at it. "Okay, Mr. Townsend, fill out this form while I run your driver's license through our computer." The deputy's finger quickly tapped on the keys of the keyboard. In a matter of minutes, he left the computer with the printout in his hand and returned to the counter. He collected the form and slid his driver's license back to Pete. "Well, Mr. Townsend, our computers say you're clean." Then his eyes settled upon us. "What about the folks who travel with you?" Pete placed an arm around the shoulders of the Indian woman. "Well, I can only vouch for my wife. Honey, show the deputy your ID." She took a purse from her shoulder bag and handed her ID to the deputy. Fred took a card from his wallet, as Sunbolo did the same. I looked at Sunbolo like I was in agony. "Excuse me, officer," Sunbolo said, much to my relief. "What if you don't have an ID?" The officer looked as if he thought of not possessing an ID was preposterous. "You were born in this country, weren't you, right? How can you not have an ID?" Not me, Sunbolo offered quickly. "My partner here." The deputy's eyes singled me out. "No ID, huh? What happened to it?" "Well, I lost it. And all I owned when I lived in Miami, I was homeless and slept on the street." The deputy's grim face gave no hint he was moved one way or the other by my story. I thought mine was just another sob story to him. He slid a pencil and a strip of paper across the counter. "Write your name, your social security number, and your mother's maiden name." The deputy took the strip of paper over to the computer. I stood and watched. I didn't have any outstanding warrants, so I knew I was clean. However, there seemed to be a problem. I was called over to the counter, close to the computer. I verbally supplied my information and watched as the deputy typed in the data. The process was slow and made me uneasy. To quell my uneasiness, I started a light conversation with the deputies, whose eyes remained focused on his fingers between glances at the computer screen. I asked the deputy the size of the police force. He responded with a glance up from the screen. "Oh, we only have a small force here. There's not much crime goes on around here." "But why do I see so many policemen here?" "Oh, they're here for the funeral. They're from all over Texas." After the deputy told me that, I took a closer look at the policemen. I noticed for the first time a black ribbon scrapped across every policeman's badge, including the badge of the deputy. I offered condolences and asked what had happened. "A high-speed chase," the deputy said. "A stupid high-speed chase." I inquired, had the perpetrators ever been apprehended? Oh, yeah, right there on the scene. The deputy paused. His voice sounded so choked up, his words were hard to understand. Piss-ass punks. Drunk. Joyriding. In a stolen car. Both cars total. Piss-ass punks. All walked away with cuts and bruises. But poor Ray, a bloody mess, had to be scraped up from the highway. I offered my condolences again. The deputy looked up, reflective, and said out loud, "That's a hell of a way for an officer to catch out." Soon, to my surprise, I was given a printout that read, "No warrants found." Pete received a voucher for a full tank of gas. The deputy gave Pete the location of a mission where we could get something to eat. We departed the police station in a better mood than any policeman who entered or left the lobby. Once outside, the sky was sunny and bright. We saw a parade of police cars parked behind a long black hearse. "I bet this is the biggest event that ever happened in Del Rio," said Sunbolo as we walked towards the camper. "Just another man dead," said Fred sharply. "It happens all the time. Ain't nothing big about that." Sunbolo cut his eyes sideways at Fred like a cat. I expected a sharp reply, but he remained silent like his lips were sealed. When we reached the camper, Fred went to the door of the truck and held it open for the Indian woman and then climbed in beside her. "Wait a minute, Fred," called Pete as he hurried to the cab of the truck. "Four people won't fit right in that cab. I want you to ride in the camper till we get where we're going." Fred got out of the cab with his eyes to the ground and grumbled and mumbled in protest. His displeasure was apparent to everyone. Pete raised his voice and told him that he owned this truck, and if Fred did not like it, he did not have to ride. I smiled to myself as I opened the door to the camper and stepped inside. I enjoyed the solitude, but before the engine was cranked, Fred entered the camper. He was angry, and his grumbles and mumbles were loud enough for me to distinguish a few derogatory words, such as "black-ass nigger," "dirty bastard," "stick this piece of shit," "chuck," "stick it up your..." Amid this flood of profanity, I gazed out the window. Sunbolo drove the truck to the mission that the deputy on duty told us about. When the truck stopped, I got out of the camper as fast as I could. The building that housed the mission looked like it had been used for another purpose before it was turned into an extension of a church. We were greeted at the door by a man who behaved as if he worked for a room and board. "We have no beds, but we do have other offerings for those in need: hot showers, clean clothes, and something to eat." "Do you have any accommodations for women?" the Indian woman asked. "Yes, ma'am, we do," answered the worker. "A separate place to wash up and shower, too." "That sounds good to me," grinned Pete. The worker, who introduced himself as Tommy, suggested that we look through the rack of donated clothes as he gathered up towels and soap for us to shower. Tommy was also one of the cooks, the head cook, and he had a pot of clam chowder on the stove, homemade oyster crackers, and baked potatoes in the oven. "Is this all of you?" Tommy asked as he looked like he was counting heads with his eyes. There's one hot-tempered guy in the camper, said Pete. I better go and get him. I don't care how hot he is. He's bound to want something to eat. We went to the clothes racks. Pete continued outside to the truck. Sonbolo pulled me over to a rack of clothes. His voice was low. He told me Pete wanted us to ride with him. He was ready to ditch Fred. Sonbolo explained to Pete how he and his wife could get food stamps in El Paso and how in California, along with the food stamps, they both could receive relief checks. He said Pete was willing to drive us all the way to California. Fred was all smiles when he walked through the door with Pete. They went to the clothes rack together. Pete's woman joined them. She showed Pete her selections. Pete swore they were pretty and he wanted to see her in them before they left. And thus, we have reached the end of our episode. We will continue the next time. And until then, so long, everybody. And this is Dolphus Q inviting you to join us again for escaping the entanglements of our lives.